You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. We are Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Sirius XM80, the ESPN app, and all of our great stations across the country. Westwood One, NCAA Radio Network, with the call of Illinois' win last night, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen, with you. All right, Smalls, Illini grad, just go.
Woo! Elite Eight, first time since 2005.
What a time! What a time!
You guys, I feel so excited. I'm really starting to believe, but I'm also very nervous because Illinois' next opponent, UConn, who looks like they cannot be stopped. But what a game last night from Illinois. The offense has been clicking all season long, but has really found another gear this postseason. And as you heard coming in, Coach Underwood talked about the defense. Going up against a team like Iowa State, who had one of the best defenses in the country, Illinois was going to have to also combat them from the defensive side of the ball. They got it done last night. What a win for the Fighting Illini.
So did that cushion the blow with the Dodgers rolling your Cardinals?
Oh, please. We didn't have any expectations.
I'm just saying. Opening day for the baseball season and you lose 7-1? Get smoked like that?
Yeah, it was
not great.
Of carryover from last season, CC, yeah. Which they said wouldn't happen, but yeah. It looked very similar to last year. But you know what? Game one of 162, we got a lot of baseball left to play. Whereas Illinois, three wins needed to cut down a net.
There we go.
Yeah, I would say you're closer with Illinois than you are with the Cardinals right now.
We're not great.
But we saw three lower-seeded teams win last night, as for the first time in this NCAA tournament, we saw a number one seed go down in North Carolina. I know Pat Costello. Well, Pat's not here. He'll get here at some point. Just had to throw that in there for Pat. Pat always doesn't like when people tell other people about their brackets. I agree with him on that. My brackets are shot because I had North Carolina winning it all. I had them beating Kansas like an idiot in this NCAA tournament. Kansas got just brutal. But North Carolina goes down. Alabama beats them. And we also saw the number two seed in that region, Arizona, go down to Clemson. And so now the Elite Eight between two teams coached by Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney, right? We got Alabama and Clemson. That somehow now these are basketball schools. I did not want Cinderellas. We didn't have Cinderellas. I didn't think this was going to happen this way last night. I was all looking forward to Caleb Love against his former team, mm-hmm. Arizona, North Carolina. We were all kind of getting ready for that. And now we've got Clemson and Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to give credit to Clemson, man. They played awesome last night. I mean, every time that they got ready to make a run, you just felt that Clemson was able to make those plays, right? Like, that's what it takes. The two-man game between P.J. Hall and Ian Sheflin, the chef, I thought it was awesome. They're two bigs, being able to take advantage of some of the defensive coverages that they got, being able to get Ballo in some compromising situations. And then Chase Hunter with the playmaking down the stretch. I mean, he had that big and one layup that pushed it to a two-possession game. I thought that Clemson did a phenomenal job of not wilting under the pressure. And that's what these moments are all about.
Yep.
Having senior leadership on your team and having guys that could be playmakers down the stretch. And it didn't matter what the laundry was. It didn't matter the talent on the other squad. Clemson was not going to be denied. And that's a part of why we love the NCAA tournament. That's a part of why we love March Madness. You get these underdog stories. And the Clemson coach, Coach Brad, he was talking about it a little bit last night about how their league play prepared them for this moment in going up against supremely talented teams. And those guys focused on the fundamentals. They focused on making sound basketball decisions, and that ultimately was what the difference was in that game against Arizona last night.
Yeah, I love that it's not the teams that we're automatically expecting. It's not just one seeds marching to the Final Four. We talked about this on Monday, Evan, about how I think what makes this tournament so unique and such a great entertainment vehicle for us in sports is that the unexpected does happen, that you do have a team like Clemson who you didn't think would advance getting ready to go to the Elite Eight. This is what makes this so special.
Yeah, this stinks. I'm sorry. Like, you're going to tell, like, this is nothing against Alabama and Clemson. They're both Power 5 conference schools. They're names we know about from football, not from basketball. But we all were kind of getting ready for UNC and Arizona. And that was going to be the matchup. And now we've got Alabama and Clemson. Again, give them all the credit in the world. Clemson has trailed in
the sense. It doesn't sound like you're giving them all the credit.
No,
the
I give them, I give them
like
credit.
You're throwing a lot of shade.
I'm giving them credit for winning.
There's a palm tree growing behind you in the studio, all the shade you're throwing toward Clemson.
That's right.
Malibu Sea Breeze, Don Pease, and palm trees? Where? Okay. Anyway, so I think that. Well, I had to have a rap lyric somewhere in there. I just think that if you would say the masses, would you rather on Saturday watch Clemson and Alabama or UNC and Arizona? Everyone's taking UNC and Arizona outside of those that are fans of these two teams. Again, Clemson has been great. They have trailed in this NCAA tournament for a total of 50 seconds. That's it. It's fifth as a sixth seed, they have trailed for 50 seconds. And Alabama did what you have to do, which is not easy, against North Carolina, which is stretch them out. Bring the bigs outside. Armando Bacot is a great player, but what they had last night with their bigs was Grant Nelson, 24 points, 12 rebounds, shooting from behind the arc, 2 of 2 from 3. You have to do that against North Carolina, and North Carolina, RJ Davis, 0 of 9 from 3, not ideal, right? So you have that on
he
one
side. Just going to keep shooting it, huh?
Well, he's got it, right? Just when you're that good. Shooting.
No, you don't have to. Yeah, give it to do. Armando Bacot. Give it to Ingram inside. That was your advantage against Alabama. Why did you go away from the strength of this team? That doesn't make sense. I thought North Carolina fell in love with jumpers in the first half, and that came back to bite them in the second half. That is not the strength of this team. That was not what was going to be their advantage against Alabama. Their advantage was going to be pounding them on the inside, and they went away from that, and it ended up costing them because they created some situations with long rebounds leading to runouts for Alabama in the second half, and that's how they were able to control that game, Nelson and company. That's how they ended up winning that game. Like, Alabama has been sus on the defensive end all season long, and you didn't take advantage of it inside. Mm-hmm. To me, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you going to set for perimeter jumpers when you have a decided advantage inside? To me, that's where the game was won and lost for North Carolina. And for as much criticism as we're going to heap toward RJ Davis and some of the backcourt players for North Carolina, Hubert Davis deserves more of the blame than anybody else because he allowed those guys to play that style of basketball that played right into the hands of Nate Owens in Alabama.
RJ Davis, 4 of 20 from the field, 0 of 9 from behind the arc.
I'm just going to keep shooting that thing.
Bacot took 18 shots, but maybe, you know, two more one way versus the other. Maybe it makes a difference, obviously, when you lose by 2 points. The other matchup is obviously Illinois against UConn. As confident as you are in Illinois, Smalls, UConn last night, think about this. They're up 40-31 at the half. And everybody's like, oh, wow, like San Diego State defending, rematch from last year's championship game. They're kind of hanging with them. Yeah, they lost 82-52.
Yeah.
They lost by 30. UConn is unbelievable. 38-18, they outscored San Diego State in the paint. They had 50 rebounds. And their margin of victory so far in the NCAA tournament is 28.7 points per game. That's the margin of victory. In 9 straight NCAA tournament games for UConn, they have won by double digits. 9 straight. 6 last year, 3 this year.
They're more dominant this year than they were during their run last year. They've only trailed for a total of 28 seconds so far in this tournament. All of that was in the first half of games. They're insane. I hate that Illinois has them next. I'm very afraid.
Are they beatable?
Should be.
Are they beatable, UConn? Can anyone
beat them? Well, yes, everybody's beatable. Yeah. Illinois has the best offense in the country. It's going to be a tough matchup for UConn, but UConn is just so incredibly dominant from every single angle. Any way you want to slice it, they are by far the best team in the country. Yeah, but every team's beatable.
Yeah, UConn is the bar to clear in the NCAA tournament. Yes. Like, we knew that coming into the tournament, but I'm just sitting here looking at the rest of the field. Like, it feels like, you know, there's going to have to be something dramatic happening with the Cinderella, something that's unforeseen in order for UConn not to hoist up the national championship trophy.
So you mean maybe it's just Illinois' year?
Here's the thing.
Karma?
Vibes? Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It's possible. Okay. I'm not going to rule it out, but I'm just saying right now, if you were to ask me, is it UConn or the field, who am I taking? I'm probably going to lean toward UConn.
You should.
As crazy as that sounds, like, I'm probably going to lean toward UConn.
But
I go back to last night, though. I mean, with the huge upset win for Clemson over Arizona and the disappointing loss by North Carolina to Alabama, was it a good night or a bad night for the ACC? Ooh. Like, I'm trying to figure that out because they still got 3 teams that are in the tournament. I'm trying to figure out, was last night a good night or a bad night for the ACC? Because, I mean, Coach Brad Brunell talked about it a little bit post-game about how league play prepared them for that matchup against Arizona with the talent that they were facing. I still can't figure it out. I lean toward it being a good night, but I'm not quite sure. What do you make of it, Ev?
No, definitely not.
It's not a good night?
I'll do it the other way. Flip it. Let's say the same thing happened in football, theoretically, where you had UNC advance, non-Drake May, versus Clemson. You want the bigger program to go further or deeper into the tournament because of the brand name that it is. You want North Carolina in the Final Four, theoretically, and not that they're going up against each other, but I'm saying North Carolina versus Clemson. You want the bigger brand name program for your conference in there. It's great for the Big Ten when Michigan and Ohio State are in there. Like, Michigan winning a championship this year for the Big Ten is better than, I hate to say this, one of our schools, Wisconsin or Illinois, because it just, it actually brings everything up, and that brand is so, you want to strengthen your strengths, right? Like, you don't necessarily want to always strengthen the weaknesses, because I don't think Clemson's going to be here forever. They're not going to be this basketball power now moving forward. So I would say,
we didn't think Alabama would be the basketball power either, but they
that's
are.
True.
They're here.
Basketball power?
Yep.
They've been in the mix
Alabama?
For a while.
Yeah.
I don't
they
know
had the second overall pick in the draft last year.
I know. And Nate Oates has done a tremendous job there. And maybe now moving forward they become that. But I guess then the argument would be, are the Blue Bloods changing in college basketball?
Yes.
Which actually doesn't make sense. It's because the Blue Bloods would be historical. Yeah. Are the current version of the top level of college basketball
the
teams
premier
changing?
Programs. Are we seeing a changing of the guard with the premier basketball programs in college basketball?
Because if Kentucky doesn't get it done next year, then we're going to really question it, right? Yeah. Because Calipari, I'm going to make all these changes.
Mm-hmm.
UConn is the best East school, like better than Syracuse, better than St. John's, Georgetown, all these schools that were big when we were growing up. Kansas is still great. North Carolina and Duke, if we're saying that, hey, some of these other teams are kind of equaling them. Yeah, I mean, there's Houston is the best school in that Southwest area now, right? Mm-hmm. With Calvin Sampson. So there may be a changing of the guard. West Coast school is Gonzaga, more than UCLA, honestly, right? In terms of the best West school?
For sure.
So I guess if you want to say that teams like Alabama and Clemson now have a chance, Alabama specifically, of overtaking a Kentucky and being the best program in the SEC, overtaking Florida, which won back-to-back,
Tennessee.
Yeah, that may be where we're going here. That if we think because of NIL, because of transfers, that we alter the top level of powers in this college basketball game right now, boy, that is weird to think about, but maybe it is happening. Because of all the new rules and regulations. Unsportsmanlike is presented by Progressive Insurance. Bundle home and auto and save. Visit progressive.com for more.
But it actually makes sense, though. I mean, football is the biggest generator of revenue in collegiate sports. So these programs that could generate huge amounts of money because of the winning that they've done with their NIL collectives and their boosters, they can go out and buy really good basketball players.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So that's with the leftover money.
But that's what I'm saying. But that's what's happening.
Yeah.
It also makes that university more of a destination, too. Yeah. Like, I remember when Illinois went to the national championship game, the amount of admissions that the school was having, the influx is huge. So for programs like Clemson and Alabama who've been good at football, it's more of a destination for people to want to go there.
No doubt.
That happens all the time.
Like, yeah.
When I was at Wisconsin, two Rose Bowls and a Final Four, no chance I would have gotten into school if I had to apply after that. Because
same.
The admission's through the roof at that point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, coming up, an apology from someone that I don't know that many accept as apology anymore. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, a lot of conversation about Draymond Green after a couple of nights ago against the Orlando Magic getting thrown out after 4 minutes. 4 minutes and the score 6-4 in the game. And yesterday, Draymond Green went on his podcast, The Draymond Green Show on The Volume, and had this to say about his ejection two nights ago.
I said what I said. I deserved to get kicked out at that point. And what I said, if I'm all the way honest with y'all, I kind of was trying to turn my body and angle and go to the bench. And I said what I said, like a little too soon before angling my body to the bench. But yeah, it just can't happen. And like, we need to win games. So like I said, not going to overreact like, oh man, like stuff is never as good as it seems. It's never as bad as it seems. Like I know where I am. I understand what I'm doing moving forward. And in my position, just make sure that that's the exception and not the rule.
How could it be the exception? I mean, I love Draymond, but that's the rule. What did you say yesterday? More than any other player since Rasheed Wallace?
Yeah. He's had 19 regular season ejections, which is the second most in the last 25 years to Rasheed Wallace.
So how is that the exception? That's the rule.
It's not the exception. It's a pattern, and it's a disturbing one. And at this point, I'm not sure if you're the Golden State Warriors that Draymond Green is worth all of the headache. Like, I get the overall record when he's in the game, but what it comes down to is the reliability. Herm Edwards said it best. The best ability is availability. Mm-hmm. And Draymond is not available, not because of injury, but he's not available because of his own actions. He can't regulate his emotions in the heat of battle. And that's a problem, Smalls. Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about Draymond having this team on the verge of having his second consecutive season derailed because of his actions. I mean, last year, you want to talk about this team underachieving and not getting where they thought they would. Well, it got off to the worst start because Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole in a training camp practice. And that was caught on tape and leaked to the rest of the world. Like that derailed that season for that team, no matter what anybody in that locker room wants to tell you. And now, seeing all of the actions that he's had this year with the chokehold he put Rudy Gobert in, punching Yusef Nurkic in the face, and now this one, it just feels like Draymond Green is becoming a liability, and it could ultimately end up costing Steph Curry an opportunity to go on a deep playoff run in the twilight of his career.
And in listening to his response or his explanation of this, the fact that he was giving excuses or an explanation in the beginning and kind of laughing about it before saying that can't happen and then coming out and saying, oh, this is the exception to the rule, it feels like he still doesn't get it, which I think is really bothersome to me. And I can't imagine how I would feel if I was Steph Curry or one of his teammates. Like, you're going to go on your media platform that you have and kind of laugh about this and then say that this is an outlier situation when this has been a huge problem for you and for our team for a while now. That would bother me.
The weird thing is, like, this is a guy that with every other subject, and I mean every other subject in basketball, he gets on court, off court, business, X's and O's. Like, you listen to Draymond speak about everything else but Draymond, he's one of the top people you want to hear because of how insightful he actually is, except for when it comes to himself, right? If you want to talk about basketball in general, he's great with that. But this is now taking a weird turn, right? Because Jay Williams, who is going to join us in about an hour or so, ESPN, of course, basketball analyst, First Take yesterday. Jay's got a million connections around the league. So what happens? He's talking to people, and people are reaching out to him about this situation. And here's what Jay had to say on First Take.
I'm getting texts from people that I really value their decision, right? High-level people. And what these texts are reading is about, well, how about the leadership of Stephen Curry? That's where these conversations are going. And in my brain, right, processing information, Molly.
Wait, what do you mean? How about the leadership of Stephen Curry? They're calling Steph out?
Yes.
Oh.
Right? For him not controlling Draymond. So in my brain, the way I process is that is because I know Steph. I spent time around Steph. We were talking about this during Get Up. We wish we could have a camcorder in Steph's car, right?
Yeah.
All the things that Steph would be saying to his wife and how he's frustrated about, because he's one of the most competitive dudes you'll ever meet.
No doubt.
Draymond Green is diminishing the ultimate legacy of how people are looking at the leadership of Stephen Curry.
Now, Steve Kerr, head coach of the Warriors, was on 95.7 The Game yesterday and discussed the leadership around Steph Curry.
Draymond knows. I mean, he's a grown man. He's got to handle his own business. Any mention of Steph being culpable is just ridiculous. The way Steph has carried our franchise, represented our franchise for 15 years, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Is it fair to question Steph in all of this?
Is it fair to question whether or not he's culpable for Draymond's behavior, whether or not he's enabled Draymond's behavior? Yes. Do I think it's fair to question his leadership when they went to six NBA finals and won four of them? No. Like that, like there's
explain the difference because people hear that and may not understand the
demarcation for me. Well, I mean, here's the thing: Draymond's behavior has been enabled by everybody right. within the organization, and the reason why they tolerated him is because Draymond has been worth it on the court. The only problem is his actions now are leading to him not being on the court. Mm-hmm. And last 2 nights ago against the Orlando Magic, which is a top 16 in the Eastern Conference, you didn't have Jonathan Kuminga. You were shorthanded, and Draymond Green gets ejected 4 minutes into the game. Like, that's the guy that's going to be in primary coverage on the best player for the Orlando Magic, Paolo Banchero. Like, he left his teammates out to dry because he couldn't regulate his emotions. And here's the thing. I don't have any illusions about what Golden State is this year, right? They're in the 10th spot in the West for a reason. This is not a great basketball team. I don't look at this as a team that's going to be poised to get to the NBA Finals. But what you would like to see is the organization continue to maintain a certain standard, continue to be competitive in the twilight of Steph Curry's prime. And in order for them to do that, the second best player on the team has to be Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. And right now, you can't rely on him. That's probably the most disappointing part in all of it. Like because Draymond Green can't control his emotions, you are going to cause Steph Curry an opportunity to get to the playoffs and show his greatness on the biggest stage that the game has to offer. And then once you get to the playoffs, who knows what can happen. I said it yesterday, I say it again. The Lakers were a play-in team last year. They got to the Western Conference Finals. Like, who knows? Steph Curry could get on one, could be on a heater for several weeks, and they could ride that wave and get to the conference finals. Like, but my whole point is I don't think it's likely, but with Draymond doing what he's doing, Steph Curry's not going to even have that opportunity. And so that's where I get frustrated in all of it. And when it comes to the people to blame, Draymond is front and center. I'm not going to say another grown man should be responsible for Draymond's behavior, but make no mistake about it. Steph Curry has enabled Draymond Green in what we're seeing now. And it just keeps escalating. So this monster that everybody keeps talking about and wondering why he can't control himself, Steph Curry is culpable in that. So is Steve Kerr. So is Dunleavy. So is everybody in the Warriors organization. This is a behavior that they have tolerated because of what Draymond has meant on the court. But now it might ultimately end up costing Steph Curry in the twilight of his career.
And you could see how frustrated Steph was after the incident. You saw yeah. it in his body language. It was written all over his face and his body how
it's
frustrated
written
he was.
All over your face. I'm sorry.
That's Beyonce.
Don't be sorry for singing.
Yes, absolutely. So I think it's really unfair to say that Steph Curry and his leadership are in question because of Draymond's behavior. Because mm-hmm. at some point, you have to look at the person who's responsible for all this and say, this has affected your availability for your team. It's affected your bank account. It's affected your reputation. And you're still not changing your behavior. What do we expect Steph Curry to do in this situation that hasn't been done already internally and externally by Adam Silver and the league to make Draymond Green alter his behavior? And part of being a leader is being able to finesse someone's personality and extract the best out of them while also accepting some of the flaws. And Steph Curry did that really beautifully with Draymond and with this entire team for a long time. He was able to extract the best out of him and support him in those ways. And it paid dividends. They had a lot of success and a lot of championships. But at some point, he has to say, I can't be responsible for you. I've done everything that I can, and now it's up to you. I don't think it's fair to blame anybody else other than Draymond.
It feels like the people that are reaching out to Jay on this are basically saying he should have traded him by now. Because you know, I mean, as you said, CeCe, like, they're accepting it because they take the good with the bad. Tim Legler has said to us he's the best and worst example of a great teammate, right? He's a great teammate within the 48 minutes when he plays because he's going to play defense and pass.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a great teammate because he's not going to play 48 minutes.
Yeah, his overall game is what you would want.
100%.
He's a selfless teammate in that regard.
Selfless,
right?
And selfish.
Because he doesn't care about the points.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but when it comes to the antics in between the whistles, like that's the part where he's selfish.
So, what is Steph supposed to do? Trade him.
Yeah, trade him.
Trade
him. Like, here's the thing.
That's it.
And that's the part of it when we start questioning the leadership of Steph, because it's like they don't give Draymond Green that four-year extension without Steph signing off on it.
1,000%.
So because Steph signed off on it, remember, money is power in a locker room.
Yeah.
So the fact that they gave him that extension, you gave him permission to be more of who he is. And that's continuing to come out, and it's escalating. I don't know how you put the genie back in the lamp after what we've seen from Draymond, especially after hearing his excuse and his logic on what happened two nights ago. I think their hands are going to be tied, especially if this is a team that can't find their way out of the play-in and into the playoffs.
We're Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Two big pro days yesterday. Getting ready for the draft in a month, or a little bit less than a month now. We will be there, all three of us, in Detroit. CeCe will be on the draft coverage.
Hello!
Unsportsmanlike from Detroit.
I'm starting to get fired up about it, man. I mean, the draft is 4 weeks away from last night. Ooh. Like, it's just, it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting,
I've
man.
I've never been. I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I think this is like my sixth NFL draft ESPN Radio, so this is going to be fun.
Have you ever had a draft that you've covered that has this many quarterbacks that could go this high?
I would say 2018. We saw five quarterbacks go in the first round. That was the Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and Lamar Jackson. I mean, four quarterbacks going in the top 10. That was a really exciting night.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Dallas, too. It was great.
Ooh,
it was great.
Fine.
It was great.
So we have the pro days yesterday. Michael Penix Jr. was wowing people with athleticism, which people were wondering about considering he was not much of a runner last year and was banged up during his time at Indiana going to Washington. And then Drake May, who's going to be a top three pick in the draft, both seemingly did very well yesterday at their pro days. And so now we are getting ready for this draft 4 weeks from last night, as CeCe mentioned. And the question becomes, if you're going to look at these quarterbacks, which one are you most confident in that won't go bust? Which one are you going to look at and say, I'm comfortable knowing 5-10 years from now, this quarterback is going to be good, really good, great, whatever, in some window there where I'm not going to say, you know what? He's out of the league. He's back in his college town doing great things, but not playing in the NFL. I mean, that's the move.
He's doing great things.
Well, I'm saying if you flame out as an NFL or NBA player, your move is always go back to your college town because you must have been great there and loved there,
yeah.
And then you're a rock star there,
yeah.
Right? I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm just saying that's the reality of it. Every single person right now is thinking about who that person is.
I'm thinking about the movie Varsity Blues.
What a movie. I don't want your life.
I don't want your life.
Tweeter. Tweeter basically. AKA Julian Edelman is basically the character there.
Yeah. The starting quarterback ends up being the high school coach a year later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lance Harbor, Johnny Mox. Johnny, what's it? Johnny Moxon? What was
it? Yeah, Moxon, yeah.
Yeah, Mox.
Yeah.
Moxon, yeah.
Good memory.
Yeah, thank you. I watch it like every other week. Anyway, so which quarterback are you most confident in that won't go bust?
Well, I mean, first of all, we gotta frame the conversation like the context of it matters when it comes to these quarterback classes that have four, five, six guys go in the first round. Like, we're talking about two of these guys being really good and the rest of those guys being underachievers. That's what history tells us with these NFL quarterback draft classes.
Two, like, if we're lucky.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look at the 2021 class where Trevor Lawrence was the first overall pick. I mean, that wasn't a great class, right?
The next best one was the last pick, right? Wasn't that Purdy? Same draft, or am I getting that wrong?
I think that might be right. Yeah,
yeah, but the other ones were disaster, like all-time disasters.
Zach Wilson was awful. Mac Jones was awful.
Justin Fields on his second team.
Justin Fields on his second team. So, I mean, again, like when we start talking about these quarterback classes, we get so excited about them because everybody loves the shiny new toy, and we recognize that that's the most important position in all of team sports. But most of these quarterbacks won't realize their full potential, whether it's because of their sports character or the situation that they're parachuting into. So I think you have to look at it in terms of what quarterback has the traits that you're most confident in that'll allow them to live up to, you know, what everybody is saying they should be and what their draft status is going to, kind of make everybody perceive them to be. So for me, that quarterback in this class is Drake May. Like, I love Drake May. I'm not saying that he's going to be the best quarterback in this class, but what I am saying is I think his floor is really, really high because of what he's demonstrated at the collegiate ranks. His ability to be able to identify defenses and being able to call out the protections based on where he wants to go with the football is next level. I saw him do a sit down with Colt McCoy, another Mac Brown product, and just talk about the game of football, the X's and O's, and why he's doing things. I mean, the guy has a really high football acumen. His mechanics can get out of whack, especially when there's pressure, but what quarterbacks doesn't, right? And then the thing that I really love the most about this kid is his ball security in the pocket and then his ability to be able to turn his back to the defense on hard play action and then whip his head around and get it and go through his progression. That's going to be a skill that translates well to the next level. Being able to get your eyes around, being able to get your hips around, those are the types of things that you have to do to be successful NFL quarterback. The other thing that I think is showing a level of maturity in his game that you don't necessarily see with all the other quarterbacks that are elite in this class is just his philosophy of not going broke by taking a profit. Like, he'll take what the defense gives him. Like, there will be times where he will go off script, he will ad lib, but for the most part, this is a guy that when he sees an open receiver, he's going to put it on. Mm-hmm. Like, he's gonna get the ball out of his hands on time. And for me, that's how you protect yourself, especially as a rookie quarterback in the NFL, getting the ball out of your hands, into your hands of your playmakers.
So I just want to be clear on what we're saying here. So Drake May, for you, in 5 years, 10 years, we are going to look back and say, boy, he had a good career. That there's going to be no level of disappointment in Drake May. That's not to say that if there's another quarterback that's great, let's say Caleb Williams. Yeah. Caleb Williams may not be better, but you're saying it is more likely in your mind that while Caleb Williams could be better, he also could be worse.
Yes. I think this Caleb Williams has a much higher floor than Drake May. I mean, a much higher ceiling than Drake May, but he has a lower floor than Drake May, in my opinion.
And why do you say that with the floor?
Well, because a lot of the things that Caleb Williams does, the collegiate ranks, he's not going to be able to do in the NFL. Ryan Leaf said this a few weeks ago, and I know people want to dismiss Ryan Leaf because of all of the things that have happened in his career and his life. But Ryan Leaf said this, 70 to 75% of the things that we've seen Caleb Williams do at Oklahoma and USC, he ain't going to be able to do. Like that whole running around and scrambling and all that stuff every single play, trying to win the Super Bowl on every single play, you can't do that in the NFL because you're talking about better athletes. Like some of the guys that he's playing against on Saturdays, those dudes are going to be selling insurance. Like that, that's what it is. You know, they're not going to be playing high-level ball. So, I mean, you can get away with some of those things with lesser athletes. Mm-hmm. But in the NFL, the speed of the game is much, much, much different. The size of the athletes is much different. Caleb Williams is going to have to adjust to that. The other thing that concerns me a bit about Caleb is his ball security in the pocket. It's not very good. He's very loose with that thing, carries it like a loaf of bread. That's something that he's got to get cleaned up. Now, I mean, in terms of the different throws that Caleb can make, like that just he is special. The arm talent that Caleb has is special. His ability to manipulate the pocket, special. I understand why they make the Patrick Mahomes comparison. Mm-hmm. There really is, like, in terms of style of play, like it's him and Caleb Williams. That's it. Like that, they have a very unique style of play. There is an arrogance when it comes to the arm talent that Caleb Williams has and the throws that he's willing to make. Like the tight windows, like he shows it off. This is not a guy that's afraid of his own ability. Mm-hmm. And having that level of confidence is special, I think, in the quarterback. So I think Caleb Williams is the best quarterback prospect in this class. There is no doubt about it. But in terms of the quarterback I'm most confident won't go bust, it's Drake May.
You've been on Drake May for a while. You've been on him for weeks. You've been talking about how special you think he is for a while.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. People compare him to Justin Herbert, and I think that's more of the stature than anything else. I think he's more closely comparable to another Chargers quarterback, Phillip Rivers.
Oh boy, I'm out. Yeah, Evan does not love that.
I see a lot of Phillip Rivers in his game.
Oh boy.
I see a lot of Phillip Rivers in his game.
You had me until you said that.
I just think
Phillip Rivers is so mistake prone and so bad in big moments. Is Drake May mistake prone in your mind? Obviously, if you think he's going to be not a bust.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like quarterbacks, like all of these quarterbacks are mistake prone. Like there are going to be mistakes that are made, but Phillip Rivers was a damn good football player.
Mm-hmm.
If you're telling me I'm drafting Phillip Rivers with a top five pick, what NFL GM wouldn't sign up for that? You could do far worse than Phillip Rivers.
I would sign up for that.
Yeah, you could do far. I'm just saying in terms of how he sees the game, thinks the game, and then the way he's able to shape throws, the creativity that comes along with that, the way he can layer throws, the different kinds of throws he can make. I see a lot of Phillip Rivers in his game, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
All right, to be continued, because we didn't even get to the Jaden Daniels part of this, right? Like, he wasn't even mentioned in all of this. Drake May is the one you're most sure about. Caleb Williams' highest ceiling with all of it doesn't mean he's going to reach it. We'll get to that. Plus, the commissioner of baseball spoke on what Michelle Smallman has considered potentially the biggest scandal in his tenure as commissioner. We'll get to that next. Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Major League Baseball opening day yesterday. We're going to get to what Rob Manfred had to say about Ohtani in a second. We are Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Make it easy to save money when you bundle your auto policy with home, condo, or renters. You'll earn a multi-policy discount. Easy to bundle, easy to save. Visit progressive.com. Jaden Daniels' name did not come up, right? When we were talking about the quarterback that you would most believe will not bust in the NFL, that he will be good, we did not mention Jaden Daniels.
He's my pick.
That's the one you're most sure
that's
on.
That's the person I'd put my money on. And in reading a lot about this yesterday, going back, watching some of his tape, I just think that he's going to translate well at the NFL level. We know the athleticism is off the charts. We know that he can get it done with his legs. He can also get it done with his arm. He makes those throws in really tight windows. He's dominated the SEC. We've talked about different comps for some of these guys. A lot of people say Lamar Jackson for him, but with a better arm or a more accurate arm at this point in his career going into the NFL. I think Jaden Daniels is going to be a special talent in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, Jaden Daniels can ball. You can't take anything away from him. Two things that concern me. First of all, his stature. I mean, he didn't weigh in at the combine, weighed in yesterday at 210. So let's presume that he was not that when the combine rolled around in early March. So this is not a guy that is naturally big, right? Mm-hmm. So that is one of those things that concerns me. When you're 6'4 or thereabouts and right around 200 pounds, that is an awfully thin frame to be able to hold up in the NFL. So there is that aspect of it. The other thing that concerns me a little bit, He's one of those see a guy open before I'm going to throw it as opposed to anticipating it. He's going to have to anticipate that a little bit better. Like those are that's something that he's going to have to work on. Again, a lot of raw materials to work with. He's a really good thrower. I think he's the best deep ball thrower in his class, which is high praise. Like I think he's a really, really good deep ball thrower. So that is what he's got going for him. And then just his situational awareness, being great in the red zone. Also, when the game is on the line, two-minute drill, this guy is a playmaker. He's unflappable. And having that steady heartbeat in those moments matters at that position. Jaden Daniels has shown that ability.
All right, yesterday, Major League Baseball opening day. We saw a bunch of games, including Smalls' Cardinals losing to the Dodgers.
You hate to see it.
Just saying.
They got worked.
Yep. All right. Anyway, so the Dodgers obviously have the most relevant player in the sport right now, not only because of his on-field greatness, but off-field whatever it is at this point.
Baggage.
That's an interesting word because we don't know yet, right? Like
It's his baggage.
It's his baggage.
If you have someone around you that's being investigated by the federal government, I would say that's baggage.
Okay. So best player in the sport with the off-field baggage, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, went on MLB Network with Christopher Mad Dog Russo and discussed Ohtani.
Given the way the story unfolded, it's important in terms of assuring our fans about the integrity of the game, that we verify the things that Mr. Ohtani has said. And it's really that simple.
So here's where it's interesting. If you have to verify what he said and worried about the integrity of the game, I have said I thought they were going to let him play through this. We've discussed the idea of the commissioner's list because your contract in Major League Baseball or any sport suggests you should be paid, does not suggest you should be played, right? If the New York Giants wanted to pay Chris Canty the entirety of the contract but not play him one down, that is their right, right? It is not their right not to pay him for that. Based on what he said, are we surprised he's not on a commissioner's list if you're even bringing up the integrity of the game?
Well, I mean, listen, you've got to do a thorough investigation because if you don't, you know that the federal government will. And the last thing you want if you're Rob Manfred is to be finding out about any impropriety on Ohtani's behalf the same time that we're finding out about it. Mm-hmm. So you got to do a deep dive. You've got to try to stay ahead of this thing as much as you can. I don't think you want to alienate Ohtani because he is a unicorn. He's one of one. I mean, we haven't heard about anything, not less seen anything like this since Babe Ruth. So, yeah, you want to try to make sure that the guy doesn't feel like you're leaving him out there to dry to fend for himself, especially if he's innocent in this whole ordeal. So I guess there's this fine line that Rob Manfred is trying to walk, but I do think he's made it clear that they're going to be doing an investigation to see if Ohtani had any knowledge or any involvement of this prior to what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Absolutely, and I don't think that Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball can really take any other approach than the one that they have now, because Shohei Ohtani has come out, he's given a statement, he has very pointedly claimed his innocence, that he had nothing to do with this, this was all a shock to him, he is a victim in this situation, and he's also the marquee name in baseball right now. So Rob Manfred has to oversee a lot of different things within baseball, certainly the integrity of the game. He has to also oversee the entertainment value of the game and be concerned about the vitality of the product as a whole. And having Shohei Ohtani out there playing baseball is a good thing for Major League Baseball. Now, throughout this investigation, if they find him to be deceitful in any way or be involved in this in any way, he will have no choice but to respond. But up until this point, it's beneficial for him and beneficial for baseball to approach this as if Shohei Ohtani is telling the truth.
So you brought up an interesting point. You talked about the vitality of the game and making sure you protect the entertainment product. Well, a big part of how people consume the game now is getting involved with sports wagering.
Absolutely.
So if you're Rob Manfred, this feels like a little bit of the third rail when it comes to protecting the integrity of the game, because people want to get involved with baseball in this way by putting a little bit of coin on it, especially when you start talking about how long the baseball season is. It's 162 regular season games. So, I mean, what way to make that a little more interesting, to create a little more urgency? Put some money on it. If you can't protect that aspect of it, if you have a player so closely linked to a gambling scandal, that makes folks question whether or not they can trust the outcome of the product on the field and thereby continuing to engage the sport in that way.
I wonder, to that point, if at any given point, and they won't do this because it would add too much attention to it, if Major League Baseball at all thought about what the NCAA is trying to push of no prop bets for the individual players, if they thought at all about, hey, can we try to eliminate prop bets around Ohtani? Because the reality is, if you're investigating somebody that may or may not be involved with gambling, and I'm not suggesting he is, I am suggesting that someone near him was, I mean, I would be curious as to how many prop bets are coming in and around Ohtani this year versus last year. Are people staying away from that? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't even know how you find out the information around that. But I do wonder, like, if it was a middle reliever, that was a one-inning middle reliever that we said, who? Would he be suspended right now? Or administrative leave, whatever you want to say? I mean, the NBA has done it.
You got a better chance of, you got a better chance of that. But right, because of what Ohtani means to the sport is why Rob Manfred has to walk this fine line. But I don't know if you can be half pregnant when it comes to dealing with such a big issue that threatens the integrity of your sport.
We're Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.